Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. From election night 2008 to Inauguration Day a year ago, America stood in some awe at what it had just done in terms of race history. An African-American president headed for the White House. Reaction was intense. Oprah Winfrey said she felt a shift in consciousness.
It feels like something really big and bold has happened here. Like nothing ever in our lifetimes did we expect this to happen.
Ardelia Austin in Atlanta was overwhelmed.
This time, it wasn't stolen this time. Every vote counted, everybody turned, the numbers couldn't lie. There was no way to deny us. This time, we got it. This is our America. This is it.
Today, 1 year on, we're talking on this Martin Luther King Day with African Americans about what a year of Barack Obama in the White House has, and perhaps has not, meant for them. We'll hear from adults and from young people, compliments of Youth Radio, which has taken its microphones out for us. Here's Asha Richardson of Oakland, California.
As for black people as a collective, I think that having a black president was a really good step for us. This is a new idea of what you can achieve. Because there are a lot of like subconscious limitations that I feel like a lot of people in the black community put on themselves. And so they're like, oh, I can only go this far. And that's what I'm going to do. But knowing that you can go farther than that because it's been done. And I think that Obama's being a really good role model right now. When he speaks, he's not that angry black man that you see on TV.
You can join the conversation this hour. African Americans, what has a year of Barack Obama in office meant to you? And for all, what has this presidency meant for race relations in this country? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Later in this hour, we'll be joined by California Congresswoman Barbara Lee, chair of the Congressional Black Caucus. But first, from Knoxville, Tennessee, we're joined by Raphael Warnock, senior pastor at the historic Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, where Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. once led the congregation. 5 years ago, at age 35, he became the fifth and youngest person ever to lead the Ebenezer Baptist Church, which was founded in 1886. Pastor Warnock, thank you very much for being with us today.
Very good to be here. Thank you.
And with us from New York, Sheena Wright, chief executive of the Abyssinian Development Corporation, a community development group that provides affordable housing, social services, and educational opportunities to residents of Harlem. Sheena Wright, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Raphael Warnock, first to you. Here we are. We've had a year of Barack Obama in office, a year since inauguration, a year ago this week. Unemployment, 10% overall, 15% plus for African Americans. So it hasn't been an easy year economically, certainly. How do you see the impact of this president on African Americans, their lives, their thinking, their image, their self-image in this country?
Indeed, it's been an incredible year. Let me start by saying that even as there were those who were gathered in Grant Park a year ago, and folks were gathered in various places all across the country. One of the images that you may remember seeing was that we gathered at Ebenezer Baptist Church in great numbers with large TV screens to watch the outcome of the election, because there was the feeling in the air that something very amazing and epic-making was about to happen. Indeed, we didn't know what would be the outcome of the election. But even if Sarah Palin had been elected vice president, we felt that both Palin and Obama owed their candidacy to the forward thinking and vision of Martin Luther King Jr., who pushed the door open not only for African Americans, but for women. And so it's been an exciting year. You're right, unemployment is very high. President Obama inherited a very rough situation. And it's not surprising to me at all that the unemployment rate is twice as much in many of our cities for African Americans. The fact is, race, Mr. Obama's election notwithstanding, race is systemic injustice, calcified and reinforced at every level of the society, and that doesn't simply get erased by the election of a man to the presidency.
Sheena Wright, that I guess that would be too much to hope for, but you remember how it felt on that election night, Grant Park and around the country, how everyone watched with, you know, such rapt attention on Inauguration Day, and we heard from many African Americans in those days. It felt, you heard Oprah Winfrey there saying, it feels like a change in consciousness is underway. Has that actually unfolded, or something like it, some piece of it, Sheena Wright?
I think there certainly has been a change, certainly in the self-perception of Black people in America about what we can achieve, that the sky is indeed the limit. And I think that's powerful and empowering. But as Reverend Warnock stated, you know, we do have some fundamental challenges and problems that stem from racism in this country that still need to be overcome. But yes, absolutely uplifting in spirit and in possibility. I think young people across this nation really do believe, you know, we all kind of grew up and our parents told us, you can be president of the United States one day. And, we, you know, I don't think collectively we really believe that because we understood how corrosive racism was in this country. And I think now I have a 2.5-year-old son, and it's amazing to me that if President Obama wins another term, by the time he's 8, he'll think that the president of the United States is supposed to be a Black man because that's what his experience has been. I also think on the world stage, the fact that we have a Black man as president of the United States has also changed the consciousness and the perception of Blacks in America. I think in the time of Martin Luther King, in the civil rights movement, the world really appreciated the importance of African Americans and their fight for social justice and their courage and their strength and their brilliance. And I do think that in the recent past, there has been a much more negative depiction of Black people in America on the world stage. And I think that this is a testament and a testimony to something different, and that's important.
Here's tape from Derek Williams, again from Youth Radio, and I want to ask you, Reverend Warnock, about the youth that you work with at Ebenezer Baptist, but this is in Oakland, California, talking about President Obama challenging, by his status in office there and his victory, racial stereotypes.
The day he was elected, it gave me the sense that, you know, anything is possible. And I know my brother, who's also African-American, felt the same way. If he would have won in a shady way, I would have been like, well, that's just feeding more into the stereotype of what people think Black people are already. We're cheaters and we only get ahead by putting somebody else down. So the fact that he won fair and square and he's a stand-up guy just makes me feel even better.
Derek Williams, 17, Oakland, California, brought to us by Youth Radio there. Raphael Warnock, Reverend Warnock, what about the young people in your congregation and beyond, African-American young people?
Well, I go back to what Sheena said, that now we can look our youth in the eye and have them know that we mean it when we say to them, you can be anything you want to be. And we've always said that, and as growing up, we had our parents say that to us. You know, it's a kind of tradition that pushes youth and encourages them to reach for the stars. But certainly seeing Mr. Obama stand where he stands reinforces that message. I work in, my church is located downtown Atlanta, and it's an inner city, much like inner cities across the country. And there's a sense in which you feel this reinforcement even as you encourage youth to reach high. And many do seem to be standing a little taller, heads up, and the sense that anything is possible. So it's just a great moment. I have to tell you, growing up in the South, and Sheena, of course, grew up in New York, but she might know something about this. In the churches in the South, they used to have these fans that they would have in church. You know, there wasn't much air conditioning. And on the fan was usually a picture of Martin Luther King Jr. Or a picture of John F. Kennedy and his brother and Martin. And it'd say, these three died for freedom. It's a kind of, of pride, a deep sense of pride and commitment to the continuing struggle for justice. And I have to tell you, not since then, it's only been in recent days that I've seen this kind of spirit reemerge around the Obamas, the family, and the presidency. I'm not seeing those fans reappear, but all of a sudden I'm seeing these calendars all moving throughout the community, pictures of the Obamas, pictures of the family, a deep sense of pride.
Sheena Wright, you've got a 2.5-year-old, and you've told us in your neighborhood in Harlem, an awful lot of babies being born being named Barack.
That's right. It'll be interesting in a few years to see that first kindergarten class and how many Baracks and Michelles and Sashas and will be in those classes. And, you know, so I think that certainly is a testimony to the pride that people feel and the possibility.
But it's one thing to be told and perhaps believe because of a black president, you can be anything you want to be. It's another to stare at 15% unemployment or higher in many urban centers and the reality of that.
Absolutely. In Harlem, I would say that the unemployment rate is closer to 35% in our community. It is really devastating and challenging here, certainly on the ground. And people are grappling with the everyday realities of how to provide for their families and for themselves and how to advance when there seem to be so few opportunities. We are certainly in the throes of an economic crisis, and people of color are more impacted than other groups because of the history and the systemic, you know, racism that preceded us. So it's very, very difficult.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Behind me, Sound of Celebration in Harlem on the night Barack Obama was elected to president. A year ago this week, the inauguration in Washington with the whole country, the whole world watching. Today on Martin Luther King Day, we're talking with African Americans about what that year of an African American in the White House has meant to them. What do you see? Here's a little bit from Congressman John Lewis, Atlanta, who was beaten in bloody marches in Selma back in 1965. He said the night of the election from the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, our guest pastor Raphael Warnock's church, that America had come a long way and that Reverend King would be proud.
Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. used to say, "We have come a distance, but we still have a distance to go." But tonight we can celebrate and thank God Almighty. I want to thank Martin Luther King Jr. He must be looking down from heaven saying, "Hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah."
Congressman John Lewis on the election of Barack Obama. Here's the president himself yesterday in Washington at the Vermont Baptist Church with a tougher analysis of what's happened in this past year. He said the dream of a post-racial society has not been achieved.
There was a hope shared by many that life would be better from the moment that I swore that oath. Of course, as we meet here today, 1 year later, we know the promise of that moment has not yet been fully fulfilled.
President Barack Obama yesterday in Washington. We've been joined from Knoxville, Tennessee, by the senior pastor of the historic Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, Raphael Warnock. Sheena Wright has been with us from New York. She's chief executive of the Abyssinian Development Corporation, community development group there. And right now from Oakland, California, we're joined by Barbara Lee. She's chair of the Congressional Black Caucus. Since 1998, she's represented the 9th District in California, including Berkeley and Oakland. Congresswoman Lee, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. It's great to be with you this morning with Reverend Warnock and Sheena Wright. Good morning.
It's great to have you all with us. Your first thoughts on what this year has meant in race and race relations terms for African Americans, for the whole country, Congresswoman?
Well, it certainly has been a transformational year. There's an entire paradigm shift that's going on, and sometimes it's not as evident as, you know, we would want, but I think in the psyche of America, things have really changed, of course, for the better. We definitely are not in a post-racial era or a post-racial society. But when you see the first family, Michelle's mother-in-law, the children, and our president in the White House, that can't help but, exude excitement about how far we've come. And in fact, and I was listening earlier, in terms of the role model and the images that that portrays for the black community, which is in desperate need of role models and people who have achieved so that they too can reach the heights that they are capable of and so deserve it. So I think that it's been an amazing year. I think it's transformational, I think, for the African-American community, for communities of color, for our country, and for the world. Barack Obama was the right man for the right time. His time has come, and this is our time to lead. And thinking of Dr. King and SCLC, you know, in terms of many of the visions and many of the teachings of Dr. King in terms of the African-American community, we are the soul of America, and because of our history, our unique history of slavery, Jim Crow, segregation, racism, who better to lead our country than a person who reflects who we are and what we are and how we have to move forward by leading? And I think we have a unique place right now in history to lead.
Congresswoman, let me ask you, though, you call it transformational, but what exactly has been transformed? And I know this may be subtle, but on the other hand, if you just look at the numbers, and I'm quoting you here, in December, the Congressional Black Caucus started to make some kind of dissatisfied noises, and you were right in the middle of that. You said with more than 24% of African-Americans living below the poverty line, and African-Americans 55% more likely to be unemployed than other Americans, the existence of racial disparities is undeniable. That doesn't look like transformation exactly. Where is the transformation?
Now, let me say, first of all, it's very important to understand that structural racism, systemic institutional racism, economic disparities, these are still reflected in what I call the moral gaps that exist in our country. And we have to, and yes, the Congressional Black Caucus continues, as we have historically as the conscience of the Congress, to fight for the African-American community, those who've been marginalized, the poor, communities of color, in our policies, in our legislative efforts. And so we're going to continue, excuse me, to do that with our agenda. But this year, in terms of the psyche of America, in terms of the subtle recognition of African Americans as being able to lead and to reach the highest office in our country, that is major. That is major. I think the work that remains, the unfinished business of America, is addressing these economic and racial disparities in a big way and not settling for just saying, well, now we have an African American president in the White House, he's going to do it all. But we have to fight. And I mean, the Congressional Black Caucus has a legislative agenda, opportunities for all, pathways out of poverty. Each and every day, we are fighting to make sure that the Congress works closely with the president to pass our legislative agenda, which we know will begin to complete this unfinished business.
Raphael Warnock, help us into this change in psyche that Barbara Lee describes. Unemployment stands there as a stubborn figure for everybody in this country, and particularly high for African Americans. But within the community and within the minds of your congregants, how do you see a change in psyche and outlook? And how would you illustrate it for us?
I can tell you that my experience has been that African Americans are 200% behind this president, and not simply because he's African American. They certainly haven't been 200% behind, say, the appointment of Clarence Thomas to the bench and some others that we could name. There is this sense that Barack Obama understands that he has a universal vision of our humanity, but yet he is grounded without apology in the particularity of the experience of people of African descent, people of color, marginalized people, not just in America but around the world. And we can talk about that later, but I see how that's playing out even in his response, say, to Haiti this week. But certainly as a pastor, I see firsthand the pain that people feel. I have members of my church who looked me in the eye even yesterday asking if there were things that I could do, were there contacts that could be made, folks just looking for jobs. It's just a very difficult moment in the country for everybody, and it still is the case. And as folk sort of aphorism in the African American community, that when America has the flu, Black America has pneumonia.
And let me just mention, it's so important to recognize the fact that the African American community, for the most part, has hope now.
Right.
For many, many years. In many communities, I know in my community, that there was total despair. There was no hope. And even though our economic plight is horrendous, and each and every day we have to work to turn this around because of the pain and suffering, the hope is there that it can be done. And that's what's important, I think.
Sheena Wright, in New York, take us into this change in psyche if you see it. What example can you describe for us? Make it intimate. Make it real for us.
I think, I agree absolutely with Congressman Lee and Reverend Warnock. It is real. I think that, that there's so many examples of people really appreciating that even in the significant challenge, there are possibilities and that there is this hope. But I think what I'd like to touch on is that that does not mean that we can, as a community, sit back and expect that the president is going to deliver our agenda and have the concerns of African Americans and poor people of color in general, at the forefront. I think that the work of the Congressional Black Caucus becomes more important than ever. I think this feeling that there is a possibility that these issues will be addressed gives people a sense of energy to redouble their efforts to get the work done. You know, faith without works is dead. And so the works, this kind of redoubled energy and effort to participate in the remaking of this economy, which is devastated and needs to be remade, and the innovations and the different things that need to happen, how we have to change our educational system that's 100 years old based on this agrarian economy, based on an agrarian economy, and reorient ourselves as a country. I think people have just been so excited about that possibility and really have redoubled their efforts to work hard to accomplish what can and needs to be accomplished, as opposed to being in despair, feeling that there was no hope. And certainly as opposed to sitting back and saying, OK, we have a Black man as president of the United States, so we can rest assured that our issues are going to be addressed. But there is this energy, this urgency that there's so much work to do and there's so much that can be accomplished and we've got to get it done.
Let me give you an example also. When we look at our criminal justice policies, we all know how disproportionate the prison systems are as it relates to the African-American male population. Well, now many, and this is very subtle, but and a lot of people don't see this, but I think formerly incarcerated individuals, parolees, mm-hmm. are beginning to see some of our federal funding now has opened up to provide for a second chance for formerly incarcerated individuals. Just recently, the president announced, along with the Congressional Black Caucus, grants for green job training programs. In the past, these grants never would have been targeted into our communities with high rates of unemployment, but also formerly incarcerated individuals would not be eligible. Now they are. And so there are many, many policy issues that are very subtle in terms of changing the nature of how federal funds are being spent that really provides hope for a lot of people who never would have benefited from a lot of federal initiatives.
Barbara Lee, Sheena Wright, Raphael Warner, please stand by. We've got a lot of listeners who want to join us here. Let me get a call in here from Omaha, Nebraska. Derek, you're on the air.
Yes. I would just like to say that Barack becoming president in a general sense does bring quite a bit of hope. Here in Nebraska, I would say, though, that, it also shows where we have a long way to go. Some of the comments I hear from people who don't know, can hear them at work, etc., some of my white workers and stuff, it's just there's still a lot. We have a long way to go, but he does bring quite a bit of hope.
Are you African American, Derek? You're saying, and you still hear the race lines in your workplace?
Oh yeah. But again, I want to tune in and say that I agree with everyone that's speaking, which is that there does seem to be a shift in thinking. It's a hopeful one, but at the same time, to think that one person can clear up race relations is a fantasy, and we have a long way to go.
Derek, thanks for calling. Let's get another call right here from Nashville. Lawrence, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, how are you? Thanks.
Okay.
I just wanted to say I grew up in Middle Tennessee, and I'm a white middle-class woman, but on the day that Barack was inaugurated, the women in my office got together and wept with joy. We had all voted for him, and then we went to lunch and celebrated. And so it was hope for us. I can't possibly imagine what it's like to be African American, even though I grew up here and witnessed a lot of racism among my white friends and saw my black friends experience it. But I do know what it's like to be a woman and to not be judged fully for what you're capable of. And so I think that we understood that. And for me, it was hope. I had friends who voted who never would have done that 10 or 20 years ago. Is it going to fix overnight? No, I agree with that. But it was a sign of hope. And I think symbols and having someone, I work in television, so I think having somebody in the media does make a difference.
Lawrence, we hear it loud and clear. I've got another little bit of tape here from Youth Radio. Speaking of beyond the circle of African-American, here's Betty Tran, a Vietnamese-American in El Cerrito, California, talking about how she sees this president as having opened up wider opportunities for minorities.
I think that he has really changed the way people look at race. And I feel like he has really changed the way African-Americans think and minorities in general. For me, I'm Vietnamese, so seeing someone like Obama, I think that there is like hope that in the near future there can be people who are Asian American who become successful in politics. Him being president just helps so many people feel like doors have opened for them and that he's paving the way.
Betty Tran in El Cerrito, California. Catherine in Middlebrook, Virginia. Catherine, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'm unfortunately kind of thinking that I'm seeing things that are a little disturbing and sad, and I feel like people are talking more about the president being black rather than the choices that he's making. And I feel like sometimes people say things, and it's because they're being confronted with the fact that a black man's their leader. So they're saying, I'm hearing more things that are more racism than I had ever before.
Because an African-American man is sitting in the White House as a kind of target potentially for that criticism?
Yeah, and I feel like then it's okay because it's something that everyone's talking about, so it's okay to say things that are quite racist.
Catherine, thanks for your call. Barbara Lee, what do you hear? What do you say to that?
Well, I tell you, racism is alive and well in America, and we cannot forget that. And in fact, there are many who did not want to see the election of an African-American to the presidency. That is a fact. I think what's important is that we have a healthy public civil discourse on race and racism. In fact, the Congressional Black Caucus in November, we honored Reverend Jackson for his 25 years running for the presidency, actually 25 years ago. But also we had that evening a dialogue on race. The American Anthropological Society is conducting a series of dialogues on race. And I think it's extremely important during this period with an African-American in the White House, that the country come to grips with the unfinished business of race. It has been swept under the rug for too long. And we can't deny the fact we are not in a post-racial era, and so we have to move forward and really have these discussions and try to figure it out at this moment. It is a defining moment.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour on Martin Luther King Day 2010, with African Americans, with all listeners, about the first year of the Obama presidency. Congresswoman Barbara Lee is with us, chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, represents California's 9th District, and joins us today from Oakland. From New York, Sheena Wright is here, chief executive of the Abyssinian Development Corporation there in Harlem. And Reverend Raphael Warnick is with us. He's senior pastor at the historic Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta. Youth Radio took their microphones out for us, talking with African-American and other young people. Here's a couple more. Ellen Ross, she's 16 years old from Piedmont, California. She's white and talks about how white America has embraced President Obama, she says, sometimes for the wrong reasons.
Now, a lot of white people I've noticed have kind of said that, well, now black people don't have an excuse to feel like they're being held back. And I think it's almost an excuse for white Americans to say, well, look, now blacks can have whatever they want and no more complaining. While the reality is that there are still a lot of institutions in the United States that continue to have racist tendencies, and a lot of Americans continue to be racist.
And another young boy, Sam Fuller, 15 years old, Albany, California, also white. He was an early supporter of Barack Obama.
Well, I understand that, you know, having a black president is important for people, and it's important that we have a black president. It's really a good thing for equality. But it would be better if he was a better president, because so far I'm disappointed with how he's performed. He was my guy. He was my liberal candidate that was going to get in there and make it all better, and I'm frustrated on that level. Nothing about his race really matters. He's just being a pushover as a president. At the rate he's going, I think he's going to be a one-term president.
Voices from right across the rainbow there. Lester in Boston. Lester, you're on the air.
Yes. To that last comment, I wanted to say something about group consciousness. Mm-hmm. We've been focusing on an individual. An individual, there's been a lot of black individuals that have done a lot of greatness in America. But as a group, what can you do to bring the group together so that they can employ themselves? There's a lot of money spent amongst black consumers that never goes back to black neighborhoods. It doesn't make jobs. It doesn't do nothing for black folks except support other groups. We don't see ourselves as a group, and I haven't heard anybody talking as group consciousness. What can we do as a group to support ourselves?
Lester, if I may ask you, President Obama in office seems to have been very careful not to focus in too much on different races as groups. He has said, you know, he's the president of all America, not just one.
Yeah, but that's not individuals. We know that this country, if we go back to the Berlin Conference, we know this country was divided up in groups. You know, certain people got certain things that we didn't get in the process of this division, where there's people now that benefit from the group in the Berlin Club being divided.
Lester, I'll take this issue of group consciousness to our panel here, and I thank you for your call. Let me get one more, and we'll turn right there. Alan in Allendale, South Carolina. Alan, you're on the air.
One thing we have to understand is this, that when I supported Obama, I supported Obama because of a political agenda. That political agenda has failed. And it failed primarily because of us. There was folks on the health care issue here in South Carolina who didn't do squat in supporting Obama health care on the health care bill. Mm. Let Joe Wilson insult the president, and we sit here in a predominantly black district with a white congressman who don't even respect the president of the United States, and we talking about we love Obama. Obama has become somewhat weakened by the Joe Wilsons of this world. Now we've seen the real issues coming up. If we lose that race in Boston, in Massachusetts, tomorrow, you can kiss the health care bill goodbye. You can kiss a whole lot of stuff goodbye. Because we didn't get off our squad in and do what we were supposed to do to make sure ABC happened.
Alan, we've got it. Hear it loud and clear. Barbara Lee, a couple of callers there. First, you heard our caller saying you need more group consciousness among African Americans now, and then you hear Alan's complaint.
Sure. This and of course, I'm glad that we're talking about this because it's important to recognize what the president said, that he is the president of the United States. This is, though, a diverse country based upon it's a country based on immigrants. We have many, many ethnic groups in America that came here by different ways. And we have huge economic disparities in the African-American and Latino community. And so what our job is as legislators is to continue, and again, speaking as chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, is to continue
to try to correct these disparities, and I'll cite a couple of them. One is the foreclosure crisis, where institutions, financial institutions targeted, mind you, the African-American and Latino community with subprime loans. These loan sharks have, quite frankly, destroyed the wealth that was being built in our community. So we can't sit by and just say all of the regulatory reform policies are going to address this issue. And we had to, and I think you saw what we did to try to make sure that that bill included provisions that would help address the African-American and Latino communities, which were targeted by the subprime loans. And so that's what we're doing. Secondly, when you look at jobs, a report recently came out that said the African-American jobless rate is going to continue to climb, probably 17% and higher. We would not be doing our job, the Black Caucus, if we did not fight for strategies to target our resources to make sure that areas of high unemployment where African-Americans and Latinos live are covered under any jobs bill. When you look at the health care debate, we see glaring, huge disparities in the Black and Latino and Asian communities. And so what we did as a Congressional Black Caucus and a Tri-Caucus, which is the Hispanic and Asian-Pacific American Caucus, is together, and these are 100 votes, we put forth the Health Equity and Accountability Act and included those provisions in the House bill. Of course, the Senate almost destroyed that, and we were able to put those provisions back into the bill, and the president is committed to that. And so these are just three examples of how the Congress, and remember, we have three branches of the government, the executive, the legislative, and the judiciary. The Congress has to be the people's house. We have to fight hard for communities that have been shut out in the past and have been victimized by structural racism, by structural inequalities, and by all of these huge moral gaps. So we have to know, we have to recognize, we have to do everything at one time.
Reverend Warnock, the president says he's president of all the people. Do you want to see him paying more attention to the interests of a particular group of African Americans? Do you think he's done enough on that front in his first year? Does he have the option of targeting that community, given he is president of all Americans?
Well, as I've said, I think that the president understands that he's president of the United States of America, the entire country. At the same time, there is a deep sense of consciousness that I see coming from Barack Obama. You know, I remember about, a few years ago during the Bush presidency, Bush actually, on a Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, announced one year that he was filing an amicus brief on behalf of plaintiffs who were suing the University of Michigan for their affirmative action policies. Mm-hmm. And so we are heartened and encouraged that we have a president, even as the Congressional Black Caucus wages the fights that they're waging around foreclosure, a major issue which we're seeing in Atlanta, and unemployment, that there's a sense that we have a friend in the White House who does understand. And I hear, you know, different kinds of conversations in the African-American community regarding the president, but I'm very clear that Barack Obama has a sophisticated understanding of race in America, but I think he's in a pretty tight spot. You might recall that during the campaign, there was this effort to throw race at him in various kinds of ways. It seems that people have forgotten that early on, folk were trying to paint Michelle as the angry Black woman.
Mm-hmm.
And with such grace and dignity, both of them have negotiated and navigated the challenges of race in America. I think he's made a strategic choice that there are some issues that certainly impact the African American community, but the way in which he addresses race, I think his options are somewhat limited.
And what about our callers?
Those of us who are in pulpits have to encourage this dialogue.
What about our caller's observation that his sitting in the White House has given some Americans the sense of license to perhaps be racist?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think this president has encountered insults that we have not seen launched against any president. To have a member of the U.S. Congress yell, "You lie," while the president is standing and giving a speech in the House, to have folk upset because the president wants to go to schools and encourage our children to learn and stay focused, all of our children, to have folk complain about that, and districts have to study whether or not they should allow parents to keep their children home. I think we've seen we've had some really ugly moments. And then the one time, it seems to me, when the president, because he was a black man who went to Columbia and, like me, had to take a taxi at one time or another in Manhattan, the one time when he sort of ventured just a bit into the conversation this year after the Skip Gates situation and said that the police behaved stupidly, that wasn't simply a characterization of that moment. It was, as a black man, we could feel that viscerally because too many of us have experienced it. And that one sentence alone created a kind of debacle that really was a challenge in the midst of the effort to get the health care bill through. Mm. And so it's a real sticky situation, and I think that he needs help from those of us who are in the field. In fact, Lyndon Johnson, who was a civil rights president, when it came time to push the voting rights bill, he said to Dr. King, "I know you need it. Now go back and make me do it." And so I think we give the president cover. We do him a huge favor when we encourage this dialogue in our communities, white communities, black communities, Asian, all of our communities, and we do him a huge favor when we push him on these very pertinent issues, which we will do in the continuing years as a supporter of his basic stance and position.
Sheena Wright, in New York, how do you see the way this president has handled race as an issue, has handled it in his public statements and persona? Do you think it's the right way, and do you see an impact on race relations, on conversations between white and black, you name it?
I think, you know, certainly President Obama is between a rock and a hard place. I think if he is perceived by the greater American people as being the black president, then he, you know, his support will erode, quite frankly. There was a very, very disturbing piece in the New York Times yesterday that it was entitled "White Flight." And it laid out a recent poll, New York Times and CBS poll, that said that he has the lowest approval rating among whites at the end of his first year. I think the comment of one of the callers that, you know, he's been in office for a year and he hasn't solved all the problems magically, therefore I am going to no longer support him. Another caller who said that now that, you know, because of our tradition as Americans, you know, we are supposed to kind of be critical of our leaders and be vocal about it. But some of that conversation is really racially charged. I think that and another caller said that it's okay now to basically try to disparage him because he's black. I think that we've really taken the covers off in a lot of ways with certainly Reid's statements about the shade of his skin and his dialect, and, you know, I'm really concerned that white Americans who voted for him, certainly in significant numbers in the first term, now because all of the problems have not been solved in 1 year, which is, I think, kind of just an irresponsible perspective, and it would have been impossible, but that there is this more latitude around really letting their true selves hang out as it regards racism and their own racist beliefs and feelings and prejudices, that is really scary. And you know, this election in Massachusetts, and it's one of the callers talked about as well. I don't know how we balance that. And I think what Congresswoman Lee said, we do have to have an honest, progressive dialogue, but there's a lot to juggle here, and it's a really it's a powder keg.
Barbara Lee, do you see a powder keg here? We've got a lot of callers I'm not going to get to, but we've also got 3 more years of this first term, if that's what it is, of Barack Obama's presidency. Tough problems, and you know, Sheena's concern that she sees race creeping back in as those problems prove difficult to address.
They're very difficult to address, but we have to address them. And the president has to be the president and do his job as the president. But I always remind people that this is a democracy. And in a democracy, voices have to be heard. Dialogue, discussion, debate must take place. That takes place on every issue that we must address. It's got to take place on race relations. And also we have to talk about structural racism, institutional racism, structural inequality. And the president has to continue to lead. I mean, he's got a huge job, first cleaning up the mess of the last eight years and moving forward to help turn the economy around, deal with our foreign and military policy. You know, he's got a huge job to do, and I think he's doing a fine job, and we are right on the cutting edge of change on all fronts. It's up to us to push hard the country to engage in this dialogue at the grassroots level in our states, in our communities, in our churches, wherever, to really have this dialogue to be able to move beyond. And so this is the moment we need to do that. No one said it's going to be easy, but when you look at what happened in Katrina, when you look at the relationship between poverty and race, when you look at the huge inequalities and how they have grown in the African-American and Latino and Asian community, this dialogue has to take place.
Barbara Lee, we're out of time, but we're grateful to you for being with us. Chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, thank you for joining us. And Reverend Raphael Warnick of Ebenezer Baptist Church, Sheena Wright joining us from New York. Thanks to all of you on this Martin Luther King Day. And thanks to Youth Radio for helping bring us young voices this hour. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.